This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good morning to each of you. It's a blessing to be together. A lot of familiar faces in this room, so I know there's going to be some material here given that a lot of you already understand probably better than I do. I want to say this in the beginning. You know, it's fairly easy, really it's real easy, to define what we want. And the screen really says that. We want sustainability, and we'll talk about that word a little bit even. A little more difficult, but not a lot more difficult, to put together a PowerPoint describing the answers. But it's exponentially different and much more difficult to actually go out in the field and make this work. So I want to say that right in the beginning is I'm going to talk about basic principles, but just because I can articulate some principles doesn't mean that I have all the answers. In fact, I'll just be open. I'm leaving tomorrow, getting on an airplane, going to the Middle East. I'll be there for about 4 weeks, 5 weeks. Part of that will be in Iraq, or it's in refugee camps. And I'm going there because they think I have answers. The fact is I don't have answers. There's difficulty there that I can't even comprehend in taking people that have moved out of another area into a place that I don't understand either culture. Now they are dependent because they've been on aid for a length of time here. How do you take them and make them productive again? How do you even give them the tools to do that? So I feel better acknowledging that up front, that I don't have the answers here. We're going to simply talk about some of the principles involved in thinking through this. I also want to hopefully leave time at the end for some question and answer, for some discussion. There's a lot of wisdom right here in this room that I would like to tap into. When I think about dependency, I think of a meeting I had in Ghana years ago. I don't know how many years it's been now, maybe close to 10 years. I remember sitting in a restaurant with a board, and it was a mission board that had a problem. They had developed churches for the last 20 years, and they had, if I remember right, I think it was five pretty large churches. And the problem was the pastors of these churches were totally dependent on this mission board. And they were making increased demands on them, more income, they needed a bigger salary, needed this, needed that. And so I asked these men this: if you stopped right now, if you stopped paying those pastors, what would happen to your work? It was silence for a little while, and one of them said, I think all the churches would crash. That's not sustainability. That's complete dependency. And so I said, okay, why don't you do that? And they said, we have 20 years. We've told people for 20 years that this is effective. We've got churches here. How do we go back to these donors that have supported us for all these years and explain to them that actually there's nothing here? That's the problem we face with dependency. It's a major issue in the mission world. It's easy to start down this road, easy to start down this path, very easy to start down a path. And extremely difficult to back up once you've started. Sometimes it's hard for us to even believe that it's possible that we can, with good intentions, actually harm people. We can go into an area and actually want so bad to help these people, we want so bad to bless them, and in reality, 20 years later, find out that we actually harmed them. So we want to start with that admission that that is possible. And sometimes that's hard for all of us even to believe that. That believe we're actually hurting people. I want to briefly look at five areas: unintended consequences, and if I could get this thing to work, well, why do we struggle? Is there a common denominator why we struggle in this area? Defining poverty. When we talk about poverty, what are we talking about? Categorizing need, the importance of, at a basic level, trying to understand, what am I talking about? When someone's on my doorstep, what kind of need is this actually? And then finally, I want to look at keeping the end in sight. It's essential that we at least talk about what we're after. What is the end goal? It may be years down the road, but if we're not considering what we're actually after, and we're going to spend time talking about chronic poverty, understand that chronic poverty does take years to fix. It's not something that you're going to fix in one brief little exchange. It's going to take a long time. Let's start with some of the problems that we create. Unintended consequences. If we're going to move toward sustainability, the unintended consequences are what I just described, of ending up after 20 years and finding out that you actually hurt people. But if we're going to actually do better than that, we have to first admit it is possible. In fact, coming from a Western culture, a wealthy, affluent culture, the probability of you doing harm is actually fairly high. And so we have to admit that not only is it a possibility, it's actually a probability with the mindset we come with from the United States that we're actually going to do some harm. So why do we struggle? I want to think about a few common reasons, just walk through a few common reasons why we end up struggling. One of those is a savior mentality. There's something in us that likes to save people. I'm not going to say that's totally wrong. I think actually God places some of that in us. We actually want to help. We want to bring light into darkness. We want to be a blessing to people. We want somehow to make change in our world that's obviously broken. But that thing can get twisted, like all gifts of God, to where we actually are getting our life from that. We're actually believing that we are the ones doing this thing, that somehow we've found the formula. We're the ones that actually are the Savior here. The reality is we come to them with our own set of needs. We come to them as empty vessels ourselves. They're different. We have different problems. But in reality, we come as broken people as well. But if we maintain this Savior mentality, we come to a place of needing the needy. And it's possible in this whole mission cycle, and I think it's especially true maybe in the aid area, to actually need the needy to make our program work. We've got this machine going now, and if we don't have any needy people out there, then this whole thing stops, and then what will we do? And this is a subconscious thing. None of us would ever say this. None of us would ever say, well, we actually need the needy to make it. No, we don't do that, but it's a subconscious thought that if they go away, if their problem is fixed, what would I do? What's my point now? And so this can subconsciously, I think, keep us from even wanting a solution, even wanting them to be fixed. This could happen locally as well. If we start to get our life from broken people and fixing them, then our program may be useless. Another reason we struggle is an unhealthy sacred-secular division. This is a whole talk in itself, but it's believing that somehow spiritual things are different than sacred than secular things. Somehow it's more important to be praying than it is to be doing a good job at work. And we divide this so easily. Why does this matter in missions? Because when I've talked to many, I can think of faces right now, people I've went out and worked with, where they went out, they wanted to take the gospel to people. When they got there, suddenly people started coming to them with natural problems. They saw their new pickup, they saw their nice house, and they come to them asking, would you give us this, would you give us this, would you help us with this? What's the easiest way when somebody asks you a question like that? Well, the easiest thing is to give it to them and move on down the road and get back to the gospel again. And when missions do this repeatedly, they finally find out they are actually an aid organization and they're harming people. And that actually makes it very, very difficult, if not impossible, to share the gospel with them as well. When we take the easy route and go down that road, we'll come back to that again. That is the problem we create. Relief becomes the default response. It's easier. It takes time, less time when walking with someone. One of the illustrations I've used many times is if you had a neighbor right now in America who was struggling with credit card debt, and he came to you and he wanted $25 to make his minimum payment, what's the easiest thing to do? The easiest thing is to give him $25. Because you know what the alternative is? It's night after night with him, sitting down and walking and talking and developing a different worldview in him. These principles are true here in America, just like they are around the globe. But sometimes when we get across the water, we lose our minds. Somehow we understand that here. We understand that principle here. But we have a hard time understanding when the income difference is so, there's so much disparity, we have a hard time realizing it's actually true over there too. Another reason, we fail to categorize need. We don't take time to think about what kind of need is this actually. Defining poverty. One of our problems is we don't take the time to define poverty. Now, this is an area that I'm going to freely admit it's not as easy as what I'm going to portray here. But the principle is extremely important to understand. In your mind, stop and say, what is this? What am I dealing with? Why does your definition matter? Your definition matters because it has a huge response, a huge impact on how you respond when you think of poverty. If you are seeing a lack of material resources, then the answer is to give them material things. If you're seeing a lack of knowledge, it's to give them education. If it's social justice, you're going to provide just government. If it's spiritual truth, you're going to give them the gospel. In other words, your definition determines what you give. Take some time to think about what poverty actually is. What is it in our lives? What is it in their life? Who are the poor? Let's think about that just for a little bit. What is poverty and who are the poor? How would you answer that question right now? Just in your mind, what would you say? What determines if someone is poor? I just want to go back quickly, and I'm relying here on Bryant Myers and some who have done a lot of work on this in relationships, but I want you to think just a little bit about a time when there was no poverty, when man had relationship with God, with creation, with himself and others, and it was a healthy relationship. It was a relationship that God intended. It was a proper relationship. And then sin came along, and Adam lost that relationship with God. Something was wrong. No more walks in the cool of the day. And there was a lost relationship with creation. Things didn't work right suddenly. Thorns and thistles and pain and struggle to survive. And other people, you see Cain and Abel immediately. There was conflict coming into the world. And then there was an improper relationship with himself. Before, Adam was confident in his relationship with God. And now he was ashamed and wanted to cover up and get away from God. This is poverty. It's where nothing works right in our world. It's broken. And we see this in all parts of the world. But we as Americans tend to primarily see it most vividly where there's a lack of material things. But let's look closer. What does this look like? Well, you could say God is austere. He's a being to be appeased. You will see this if you're working in a country, especially where it's Catholicism is the primary religion there. But even where there's idols, it's a god to be feared. You'll see creation is abused. You'll see laziness. You'll see poor planning. You'll see this in agriculture. You'll see jealousy and theft, no trust between people. One of the things I hear predominantly is our country is different than others. We don't trust each other. But it's very common. Everyone thinks their country is a little unique in this area. And then there is self, a lost relationship, an improper relationship with self where there's fear and shame and low self-esteem. But as Americans, when we think of this, we tend to think of pictures like this. This is a result of poverty. In our minds, this is poverty. And so it's easy for us to understand there's broken relationships in Honduras, but sometimes we have trouble understanding that we also struggle with this area. I'm looking at another people group. This is a people group where God is disregarded and irrelevant, where they're workaholics, materialistic values. Notice all these are improper relationships, where there's a lack of community, there's self-centeredness. I live right next to a pretty large subdivision. I go out and take walks, and I can walk for 20 minutes and never see one person because everyone's inside in front of their device and they're totally isolated. We've lost our ability to communicate. And in itself, there's a high self-esteem, a godplex, back to that savior mentality. We can actually fix people. But the result of this looks more like this. When we see it, we don't think poverty. It actually may be poverty. Someone may have ignored their children, ignored all the neighbors, ignored everything to achieve this thing. We can be very guilty of this as well. But remember, this is what God intended. Healthy relationships with each of these areas. And as we think about it from this perspective, we will come to the understanding slowly, God will help us with this, that we have poverty in our own lives. It's not them versus us. It's not Americans have this figured out and they don't have it figured out. It's all of us together have poverty. We deal with these lack of relationships. We aren't seeing life correctly yet. You know, being a workaholic is a sin just like laziness is. But we tend to reward the workaholic here in America. He tends to win. Understanding our own poverty. I want to think about some reasons why this is important. You know what our value is in life as a human? And we have to remind myself, I have to remind myself of this frequently. It's not what I do. It's because I am created in the image of God. That's my value. Resources come from Him, but my value is because I'm in His image. And that means that I'm in His image just like those I'm reaching out to. We come on a level playing field. We're not different than. But if we can understand this, we will be much better prepared to help them down a road of discovery themselves, because we're there with them. Humility is foundational to development. As we go to God for help, they're going to have to do the same thing. But it's essential that we consider our posture in this. If we view ourselves as coming with solutions, we have the answers. We're coming with all the solutions to your problem. They are going to become more passive. They are going to become less interested in being creative themselves. And we will become more proud. As they become more passive, we tend to get larger in our own eyes. This is a path toward dependency. The reality is that everyone has something to contribute. There's something you can learn from everyone. It doesn't matter how many zeros they have in their bank account. You can have something to learn. If you're coming out of a culture, you have lots of things to learn from them. But the important thing is, how do you see these people you're working with? Do you see them as helpless and hopeless? Or do you see them as children of God, as people who actually have a value because they were created in the image of God? When you understand your own poverty, when I understand my own poverty, we will ask more questions before fixing them. We don't ask questions just so people can feel heard. We ask questions because we don't know the answers. We actually have something to learn from them. That's very hard sometimes for us to learn going from America to another place. But sometimes just ask yourself, if you're in some of these countries, could I survive here without asking anybody any questions? Do I actually know enough around here to actually make it without continuous check coming from the United States? Can I do that? And that answer is going to be very humbling in your life. The reality is they know lots of things you don't know right now. And it's very important to understand that, because you will ask them from a proper perspective. Our attempts to help will be much better received. We all understand this. If you're willing to listen to people, they're going to listen to you a lot better. That's just a simple, it's one of the blessings of being humble in these situations, is we're on a constant, continual path of discovery. We're learning, and they are too. And we're simply helping them down this path, and they're helping us down the path. It encourages, fosters local buy-in. When they sense we're partners, whatever program we come up with, they're going to buy into that quicker if they understand that we're together with them. We focus on their abilities and resources. Again, it comes back to a realization that we have much to learn. Eventually, we're going to be gone, hopefully. Eventually, we're going to move on. Are we leaving them with something that they can actually utilize and do something themselves with? And this will help us focus on their abilities and resources. Categorizing need. I want to walk through this real quickly. It's a basic concept, yet it's essential, I think, for us to grasp and understand. I'm going to break it down into two basic categories: critical versus chronic need, and understanding the difference. And this is very simplistic. As I mentioned earlier, it's hard sometimes to say this is absolutely one, absolutely the other. We have a situation in our couple situations in our local congregation that are very similar. I can't always define exactly which one it is. It moves even over time sometimes. But it's still important for us to think about these two types of need. Let's start with critical. When you think about critical need, think about victims of disasters, earthquakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, mentally handicapped, people who don't have the ability to function on their own. It can include aged, physically handicapped. It's a place where doing nothing has serious consequences. If you just ignore it, bad things are going to happen. And I think of a Bible verse. A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho. He fell among thieves, was stripped of his raiment, and wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. This is a man you don't come along the road and see someone who's laying on the road half dead and say, would you like a certain program here, to a teaching program, would you like a manual here? We don't do that. We understand that there is a need right now, no strings attached. just write out a check, help, whatever it is. They need help right now. It's very important to help in these kinds of need. But chronic need is different. I'm going to talk primarily here about chronic. Chronic is where poverty is an ongoing problem. It's not the first generation, maybe. It might be a multi-generational issue. It's something they've learned from someone else. But it's where individuals have natural abilities. They have healthy bodies. They have minds. They're able to work. There's natural resources available. And this is one where we struggle. We assume if there's no Home Depot or a Walmart, they don't have any natural resources. Actually, we need to take some time to find out they actually do. They are alive. They are here. They're surviving right now. What are those natural resources? What are they using right now? Situations of learned dependency. You may not be the first organization that's been there. Take time to find out. Have other organizations been coming and trying to help these people and giving them things? This may be setting a stage for you to pull back and be very careful how you respond. What about a verse for this? There's several here as well. Leviticus 19, when you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest. Thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God. How do we know this is chronic? They can harvest. They can work. They have ability. God's saying, let them do that. Use that. So often we want to go out and harvest it and take it to them. But that's defeating what God is after. God actually wants everyone who can work to work. We are not to get in the way of that. So what do we do? How do we respond to these types of need? First of all, critical need is relief. When there is a earthquake, I think about Ukraine right now. Ukraine's a place that desperately needs just help. They just need someone to come in and with food and water and whatever. We should be at the forefront of that as believers. We should be out there helping wherever we can. It's a great way to be a blessing. Chronic need, they need opportunity. They need actually to walk with them and help them discover many times their opportunities that are right in front of them and walk with them through that. What happens, though, when we forget this, when we ignore this? What happens when we just give relief each time there's a need? What happens when relief becomes the default? What happens is we're teaching people. We're teaching them that as receivers, they are incapable. We don't actually believe in you, so we brought you this. And that can be very devastating to them. They're not going to tell you that. We all like to get a check in the mail. But that's actually what you're doing to them in chronic need. The focus shifts from their resources to ours. Before you ever arrived on the scene, they were surviving. They were doing something. And they were thinking about their soil. They were thinking about their markets. They were thinking about all their physical health, all the ways. Those were their resources. Now, if you're not careful, you will find that their resources have shifted over and you have become their primary resource. You are becoming the one they turn to every time there's a need, and they will actually ignore the resources that God has given them. Why go out and plant and work and toil when they can get the same thing off the back of your truck? Why would they do that? And many times we do this to people. Unknowingly, we've got good hearts. We want to help people, but we don't understand what we're doing to them. Creates feelings of worthlessness and shame. There's been many studies done asking people to articulate when you think of poverty, what do you think of? And in Western culture, in America, we almost always mention things. A lack of housing, a lack of food, that's poverty to us. Many countries, when you ask people, what do you think of when you think of poverty, they speak in terms of emotions, of shame and feelings. And sometimes we go in and actually make that worse. They actually are more embarrassed of who they are. Paternalism, that's just a word that means we become like parents to them. Remember what being a child was like in our homes, where as a little child, I sit around the table, I gave very, very little thought to who put the food there. It just was there. And so I didn't think about how to get it there either. I just kept consuming the food. And we can do that to people. We can actually be the parents to them. And there's something inside us that feels kind of good. We're actually doing some good things here. In fact, they can make a good article in your newsletter how we helped this person. And at times that's good. At other times we're actually creating something that isn't good. Not only are we becoming like parents, they become like children. And they are unable to create and design and think and dream and do things because we've taken that away from them. There's three words that I want us to think about as we think about how we help the materially poor. These words are to, and for, and with. As you think about how you're going to help someone in material poverty, people who work in chronic poverty typically use one of these three words, sometimes more than one. We either do things to people, do things for people, or we do things with people. And whether or not you're going to see your mission or your project advance, I think largely depends on which one of those words you focus on. And I'll just say right at the beginning that doing things to people and for people is pretty easy. Doing things with people takes a lot more energy. You have to be very, very purposeful if you're actually going to work with people. Doing things to or for people quickly addresses the need. It tells them, you can think about programs that do things to people. We can tell them what they should do. We can hold a seminar and say, here's what you should do. And we can pack up, move on to the next place, and tell them what they should do. We can do that. Programs that do things for people say, what do you need? And give them what they need. But chronic need, I'm saying there's a better option. That's doing things with people. It's partnering with them. Actually helping them come to believe, build a relationship to where they actually believe that you are a partner with them. You're not seeing them as inferior to you. You're not feeling superior to them. You're actually with them. We're walking with them here. And there will come a time, if you're patient, when the lights come on. And suddenly in their eyes, they begin to see that, oh, I can actually do this. And that's not all. They will begin then to begin dreaming on their own. They'll come up with ideas you never thought about. I've seen this happen multiple times. I never would have come up with that one. But because you helped and walked with them, you provided the tools for them to dream themselves, and actually they're now capable of doing things on their own, completely apart from you. That should feel good, not bad, when you see them actually going beyond where you ever dreamed of. Keeping the end in sight, we'll just briefly conclude here. What do we mean when we're talking about sustainability? And what are we after? One of the phrases that I picked up, and it might have been when Helping Hurts, I'm not sure which book it was now. I think the author said you should have a sign that you wear around your neck when you work in chronic poverty. And it simply would say this: don't do anything for them that they can do themselves. That's one of the hardest things to remember. It is so easy to do things for people or to people, but actually walking with them, taking the time to walk with them, helping them down a path of discovery where they're discovering things on their own, where they're learning, where they're coming up with ideas that are on their own. Ultimately, we want them to be children of God, not our children. We want to be children that are actually looking to God. It's the same place that we should be looking for help. This is I put this together primarily just to have in your notes. It's just a way to think through, which of these am I dealing with? When I deal with critical or chronic, what is it? Ask some questions as you work down through it. It's in your notes. But take the time when someone comes to your doorstep. In other words, train yourself how to think about this question as they come. You won't always get it right. There's some of you here that have dealt a lot in chronic poverty. If I asked for mistakes, we could spend the rest of the day talking about mistakes. We've all done it. We've all made all kinds of mistakes. But what I want to encourage you with this morning is to keep pursuing down that path. It's actually worth pursuing. I read one time that chronic poverty, programs that deal with chronic poverty need one thing, and it's patient donors. It's people that are willing to fund the project for a long period of time, because chronic poverty actually takes a long period of time. And most of our presentations we give, our newsletters we send out, is a three-step deal. There was a problem, we came along and did this, and now everybody's smiling. And we have trained ourselves to believe that's how it works in chronic poverty. The reality is, those who live out in chronic poverty know that is not true. You do things for people, and you work with people, and you talk to people, and it doesn't always work out. In fact, they're not always smiling. They may be angry at you in the end. But what I want to leave you with is, if you'll consistently walk with them and treat them like children of God and have patience with them and work with them, God can actually use that in the end. There's one Chinese proverb I want to leave, and it's in many books. It says, go to the people, live with them, learn from them, love them, start with what they know, build with what they have. But with the best leaders, when the work is done, the task accomplished, the people will say, we have done this ourselves. I'd like to stop here and just give opportunity for thoughts, testimonies, whatever you have. How much time do we have? Okay, we have 15 minutes, so I'd like to have a little discussion if we could.
I liked your last slide. It kind of answered some of my questions. But thinking about the critical need category, especially the aging, we value taking care of our own elders. And it would seem like other cultures would have that same value. So my question is it possible to unintentionally destroy the same values that other groups have through critical aid, Rudy? And how would we make sure we can do that?
So I'm understanding you're right. You're saying that a well-balanced biblical culture should take care of the aged. So if we come in and start doing that for them, are we bypassing God's best? Is that...
Yeah, or even if they aren't a biblical culture yet, if they have that value there, then we can unintentionally destroy it.
Any thoughts on that? It's a good question. I want to say this. I think it's very possible to do that. It's hard to know if no one is taking care of them. Obviously, if we can demonstrate they have value by taking care of them, that may help them develop that culture. But sometimes we speak as though, like a widow, an orphan, all that has no way to help themselves. That's actually not true. We have many widows in the SALT program that are actually taking care of themselves. So don't automatically categorize someone as saying they are incapable. There's some situations that are, but there's some that really can take care of themselves as well. That's a good question. That's really the heart of what we're after here, is asking those kind of questions. Are we? Is it possible? Is there a better way to do this? Anyone else?
Question. So what would you say, so at least for me, I value long-term missions because I have experienced some short-term missions and I just value it. But at what point do you think it's healthy for long-term missionaries to leave the setting that they've been working in and hand the reins off to the locals? And at what point do you consider the locals qualified enough to take control?
It's an all-day question. It's very good. It's a good question. It's one we should be asking ourselves. And one of the things I neglected to say is I personally believe that every mission organization working in chronic poverty should have a goal of leaving someday. That may be a long time, I'm not saying that, but we dig our foundations pretty deep sometimes because we don't believe people are actually capable. But the question that you have is very good. So I'll throw something out and I'll listen. Others can speak as well on this. That there's, when we talk about sustainability, we're not just talking about material sustainability. We're also talking about spiritual sustainability, and sometimes that's bigger. That's a larger issue. There's some of you right now are working in cultures where there are worldviews, even about Christianity, that are so wrong that it's going to take maybe a generation or two to get over that, of how a marriage should look, just basic things that we grow up with. So when I talk about sustainability, I'm not talking about a perfect church just like you think you have or we think we have, although we're wrong on that sometimes too. But But I am. It should be enough to where they have an understanding of what it looks like to go to the scriptures and find out what Jesus said, and that's where their answers are before we start moving on. That'd be my first thought. But let's hear from some of the rest of you. There's others here that have more experience.
You've done very well in what you've shared. You mentioned Brian Myers, and I say anyone that really cares, that's a must read.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you're
walking with the poor.
That's where your talk comes from. And
yeah.
It's been a life changer for me. It's a thing that I thought I understood, but couldn't really wrap my brain around. Yes, it's.
So those of you who aren't familiar, the book he's talking about, Walking with the Poor, is really the book that contains the thoughts that books like When Helping Hurts come out of, that make it easier to understand, maybe. I took another and wrote The Other Side of the Wall simply because I knew that many Anabaptists aren't going to read When Helping Hurts. I didn't improve on the book, but those thoughts, they're in a lot of books out there, but a lot of those come back to Walking with the Poor.
Question that I wrestle with a lot is how to compensate nationals, say leadership teams, and those kinds of things that we actually take away from their ability to work out to the fields because we're asking them to maybe preach somewhere or task with other mission things. How is compensating them? How should that look? Or what's a good way forward with some of these things?
So if I'm understanding you right, you're saying when you have a national who you are adding to his workload, maybe he's already challenged with life, you're adding to his workload, asking him to go out and speak, for example, should you be compensating him? Is that your question?
Yeah, so for instance, we lived in Kenya for 5 years, and I would often, so I didn't have the language very well, and often to go to some homes to even visit, I needed an interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
So I would pull a working man, a faithful church member, to see if he could assist me. Well, I always felt bad not to offer something,
mm-hmm.
whether it could be food or something to provide for the family if I took him away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can give my own perspective. Again, I'd like to hear a lot of wisdom here in the room. I think it's very important to compensate, just like you would if you were here or when you're taking somebody away from work to do that. The challenge is where you are starting to pay them more than they would make in their own setting. And at that point, I think you can start to get people working for you for wrong reasons. And that's hard. It's just a hard thing to wrestle with. One conversation that comes to mind was in Beijing one time with a lady. It wasn't an Anabaptist situation, Protestant church, but she was a national there, and she told me this. She was crying as she said it. She said in my setting, the mission organization from the United States, they come over here. At that time, it was $60,000, probably higher now. They spend to have one of their missionaries here. And the fact is without me, they can do nothing. And I am earning, I forget what it was, a little bit of nothing. And she said, I'm actually accomplishing way more than they are. And her further frustration was, all this organization wants to know is how many people were saved last month. She said, that doesn't tell us anything in this country. It just doesn't tell how close they're walking to God. It doesn't tell anything. She was so frustrated, and yet she couldn't really leave because that was her sole source of income. And so it's a very real thing. Sometimes we act like they don't understand. I'm very cognizant of that. When I fly in somewhere, it pains me because I know that my flight costs more just to get there, and they know this. And I should be walking in deep humility when I'm there. I have a setting in South Sudan, James will understand this, of there's two places to stay when you get to South Sudan. One of those costs about $200 to $300 a night, and one of them costs about $7 a night. And the one that's $7 a night is full of rats. I can tell you firsthand it's full of rats. But if I go and spend $200 to $300 a night to stay there, I'm wasting everything I'm doing. It's not even worth going because they understand that I don't even believe what I'm saying. So we need to take these questions very seriously. I'd like for more input, though, on paying indigenous staff. Good question.
One thing I observed is when there was some major catastrophes in Haiti, and the large wealthy organizations came down, and they needed to have translators, they needed to have helpers, and so they gave a wage support way up here, and it made it very difficult for those who were trying to work with them on a good level, but we couldn't get them anymore.
Yeah, some of those dilemmas are hard. CJ?
I have a question I'd like to finish
with. Okay. Some of those questions are hard. It's hard to know. Like, so the price of everything goes up after a catastrophe. What do you do? If you're going to function there, what do you do? And those are hard questions. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for the teaching. I came from a poor country. I know the best idea is when we want to help people, we need to work first in the minds. Mm-hmm. Help them to keep going by themselves someday. What do you think about some missions when they go to whole country where they want to help people? Some have idea helping with idea someday they are going to leave, and they want those people to help them keep going. And in on the other side, there are some missions when they go to just give, and they want to become parents for internal life. Mm-hmm. And they want those people to stay children for eternal life. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Do you think they become in danger for the future of those children, or what do you think? Are they in danger for the future, or? Sorry.
What do you think?
What do I think? You are smart. God bless you. And I love you. Yeah. For me, according to me, that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. If we want to help people, we need to be for them like father and children. It should be for a certain time. Mm-hmm. If you want to keep them children for life, I don't think that is good. God's idea. Even naturally, it's not good. Sorry to say that. That was a time. Parents, a mother and a father, they have a boy. From the time he was a child to 30 years, 35 years, he is still at home. You know what the parents said? I'm going to the court and ask the judge to come, to ask you to come, because it is time for you to leave the house. So I think even it is natural, even for the mission, we're supposed to think someday we are going to leave and make our children prepare for life. This is what I think.
It's a good point, and it's easy to listen to a session like this and say, why are we even going anywhere? If they already have all the answers, then why are we going? And the fact that CJ, you're bringing up an excellent point, that there are things that need to be learned. There are ways in which we can help and bless them, and we can, in a sense, become a parent for a time. But we need to understand that it's so hard for us to stop being the parent. This seems to be our tendency. It's very good. Okay, I think we are out of time. The Lord bless each of you, and thank you for coming.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.